Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference. This is Annika Jackson, and I'm here with Mickey Kennedy, the founder of ereleases.com. Mickey, thank you for being here. I was sharing a little bit about the original start of this podcast was all about PR, and it's obviously expanded since then. But you are not only a founder, but you are also really invested in the world of press release distribution and PR and tools that we all need as publicists.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I know you have been in the creative field. You're an editor, a director of sales, and then you've moved into other industries and now e-releases. So I'd love to hear about your journey and how you discovered that this was something that the world needed, another press release service, right? But one that maybe thinks a little bit differently.
Right. So I guess around 27 years ago or so, I was finishing a MFA in creative writing, and I was just going to write poetry and wait on tables. And that was my career plan. And I did that for a summer. And I realized it's really taxing being on your feet 12 hours a day, concrete, my knees hurt, my back hurt. And I also just felt so zapped at the end of the day. I wasn't reading or writing. And so I decided I wanted a safe office job. I got hired as employee 3 at a telecom startup. And because I had a writing background, albeit, you know, creative, they wanted me to figure out press releases. So I did. I wrote press releases and we faxed them at the time. And I faxed them out to the media. And after a while, I got really good at, you know, finding stories among the data that we had. We had lots of data and numbers, and I would just look for, you know, anomalies and ask about it and figure out where they were coming from. And it delighted the media. I mean, we got picked up by Financial Times, Economist, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. All these major publications generated a lot of revenue, a lot of industry recognition. Ooh. And I just said to myself, this is not costing us anything. Why, you know, other than time and energy, why don't more people do this? And so I looked into it online. And at that time, we were getting a lot of the journalists I was faxing, calling and saying, could you just email this over to us? And I thought, wow, email's free. I could just, you know, rather than program a fax machine, I could just, you know, blast these off by email. So I spent not quite a year reaching out to journalists and asking if I could email them releases. And in 1998, they were like, sure. So I launched then with about 10,000 journalists in a database. And I just played matchmaker. I would get clients and, you know, send them to a journalist. And, you know, people liked the results. And over time, PR Newswire reached out to us and said, hey, you should also include us in your distribution. Wow. And I looked and I was just like, you're charging like $1,600 to move a release nationally. And I made a really big pitch that, you know, my clients, small businesses, entrepreneurs really just can't afford that. And at the time they were paying $200 or $300. And we were actually able to come to a way of working together. You know, I went and visited them. And one of the things they brought up was they have an editorial team overnight, but they're not very busy. They have to be there in case there's breaking news or a recall, or you have to get something out to Asia, but a lot of hours of downtime. And I said, hey, rather than, you know, schedule my releases the way I did it then, you paid me the money and I'd hit send, we schedule them for the next business day. Ooh. And it'd allow their editorial team to work on them, but during their down hours. So there was no additional labor in, you know, bringing e-releases on and working with them. And so that's what we've been doing for quite a while. Our clients really like the ability to get the leverage of a newswire. And, you know, we do, you know, as many as like 10,000, 12,000 releases a year. So I get to see a lot of variety and a lot of types of releases that are working and some that aren't. And surprisingly, you know, the two most common press releases that we get are the ones that are probably the least effective. And one is a personnel change. You know, if you don't have, you know, if it's not a new executive or an industry veteran that you plucked into the position, the media probably doesn't care very much. So I recommend just sending those directly to your local paper and a trade publication rather than spend hundreds of dollars sending that on the wire. And then the second most common type of release that we get is a product launch release. And they can be effective, but most of them come to us as, here's a new product, here's a list of features, and here's a page where you can go buy it. And, you know, you have to recognize journalists or storytellers. And there's not a lot there to plug in to create an arc of a story. But I point out that there could be, you know, a use case study. A client had a particular problem. They used your product. What were the results? Have an amazing quote with them about that. That can really build out a product launch press release so that there is more elements for them to create a story arc. And so it's interesting sitting and watching and seeing what's working and not working and sort of beating your head every time these releases come through. And every client that I've gone to and said, you know, personnel releases don't work very well. They're like, well, it makes the new hire feel good, you know, to see them on Yahoo and a few syndicated websites. So I get it. But I do want people to think strategically with their money and what more strategic types of releases they should be focusing on.
Well, I'm so grateful that you're here sharing this expertise with us because you are, I mean, it releases anybody who's in the world of PR knows who you are. And I think that neither one of us looks old enough to have been people who fax press releases, but I also used to fax press releases. it was a couple years after you, but I do remember those days not so fondly because then you fax it over and then you have to call, make sure they got it. They don't want to answer the phone.
Great.
So I love that you're sharing what doesn't work in press releases. One thing that drives me crazy when I see friends who are looking to get media send press releases out is that they then start posting where the press release has been syndicated or, you know, where it's showing up, and they are acting as if it's a news article about them. Right. And people don't know the difference. So will you please first talk about what really is the purpose of a press release? How do they work and how is that different?
Right. So when I talk about press releases, I'm talking about getting them out there to the media, and the end goal is to get earned media, where not your press release gets put in an article or a newspaper or a website, but an article written by the journalist using that press release. And there are a lot of people out there today who have a lot of websites that their only goal is to syndicate your press release. And every time you issue a press release, it does get syndicated. Like it'll appear on Yahoo Finance, it'll appear on a few different websites. And for some people, they feel like that's the end goal. And it's really not, because the places that these syndicated press releases appear are usually not the main page where people are reading. They're usually on websites that don't get a lot of traffic. And even if they are, like Yahoo, they're a buried section on Yahoo that very few people go to. And so despite that, some people get excited by it. They like having, you know, a bunch of logos that they can add to their website or use in some way. But you're not going to get new customers from that. You're not going to, you know, generate the type of experiences that I had when I worked at that telecom company and with a lot of my clients. You know, when you get earned media, you know, like the New York Times writes an article about you, you could generate hundreds of sales. I've seen some really crazy stuff in my past with a single press release. One press release generated over $10 million in revenue for someone. You're not going to get that on syndicated sites. Even if someone says, I can get you on 1,000 of these syndicated websites where your press release is replicated, you might get, you know, probably not even one sale, because really no one's looking at these places. You know, a lot of them are just subdomains on a news site, and they're just a profit play in which that news organization gets paid a little bit for all of these things appearing. So I find it a huge distraction. There are three wires in the U.S. that will take your press release and send it out to journalists, and that's PR Newswire, the oldest and largest who we work with, Business Wire, and a new player, Globe Newswire. Well, anybody in the U.S. that's got Newswire their name or says they're a wire, they're not. It's really? Those three companies. And yet I have people every day ask me, hey, how do you compare against this company or that company? I'm like, well, first of all, they don't reach journalists. They just syndicate your press release. And they're like, well, is that important? I'm like, no, it's not important. It's really not. We're looking to get you in front of journalists who are considering story ideas. And I don't expect we'll ever have more than three players anymore for news wires because it makes it harder for journalists to search for stories. They like having two or three places to search for. They don't want to go to four to five or six. So there has been consolidation, and I don't expect that it's going to break out to a fourth or fifth one anytime soon. But journalists log in to these wires, and they're able to look at their industry feed. They can also, on some of these wires, like Pure News Wire, customize their feed so they can exclude certain keywords that they're not interested in those releases and make sure that they're capturing releases that mention certain words. So they can really make it very curated for them and make sure they're looking at just the types of releases that they're considering. And that's what makes the wire so valuable for them.
Wow. First of all, I mean, mind blown right there. I did not know that there are only three legitimate wire services that are actually getting your press releases out to journalists.
Right. There are wire services out there for news organizations, and a lot of people have heard of those. Reuters, UPI, the Associated Press, and they are not wires of press releases. They are wires of news stories that they've written.
Right.
And they just license it to these other publications.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful there because a couple of these people have started to take press releases for pay and bury it on their wire. And because they have a reputation like the AP everybody recognizes, they think they're getting in front of journalists. And again, they're playing some of the same games and things like that as well.
Wow. So it's really hard to figure out what websites to trust or what companies to trust. But obviously, you have this connection with PR Newswire so that we know that you're reputable. How can people find out if they're like, well, what about this service or this service? Because there's not one website, right, that has a clearinghouse of these are the legit services that will actually serve to journalists.
Right. Yeah. It's basically PR Newswire, Business Wire, and Globe Newswire. I feel like PR Newswire is very good, Business Wire is very good. Globe Newswire is interesting. I've looked at it. They just rolled out a big syndication push, and now when a release goes out with them, you get over 500 syndicated links. And I feel like maybe they're moving in the wrong direction towards syndication, but we'll wait and see. I'm still seeing how they work with Earned Media and whether they're reaching that or not. But those are the three players. Anybody else, you can just discount. They're not really reaching journalists and things like that. PR firms are different. People always ask about PR firms. And, PR firms are great. They're a big customer of e-releases because, they will send a release on the wire. But more importantly, they will do pitching. And pitching is an art. It's working with relationships that you've established with the media. A really great PR firm in a particular industry, their Rolodex is gold. Their relationships with journalists are gold. And there's lots of PR firms to choose from. And they really do provide a great value for people, but they can be considerable, especially if you're an entrepreneur or a small business.
Yeah. Well, and then to that point, I've found, because perhaps I've worked with, I think we've had this conversation via LinkedIn or via email or something, about other platforms that I have sent news wires through in the past because I thought they were a legit service. And I've always noticed that the individual pitching is what gets stories written, right? Because
right.
I haven't been using the right service. So number one, I'm learning something really important here and how to navigate that world for some of our clients. But I also know there are some PR firms that are not legit and that will say, oh, for $79 or whatever price, and all they're doing really is finding a low-cost, distribution that is not really getting a journalist that's doing the same thing. And it drives me crazy when people think this is legit.
Right. Yeah. When it comes to PR firms, I always tell people the things to look for are, what are the businesses they represent? What type of publications have they got their clients in? And, are they specialized in a particular industry? Because relationships are so important for PR firms, they generally are within one industry. Mm-hmm. And if you have one that says we do all industries, I would be wary of that because I can't imagine their Rolodex is going to be that great if they're having to go across lots of different industries because there's such expertise and finesse that's required for pitching where a journalist is like, oh, I just covered something like that. A great PR professional will immediately roll to a different idea. And they do it on their feet. If you've ever seen it, it's like an amazing talent. And I wish I had it, but you know, it's really amazing. And it's because they know that industry so well. Mm-hmm. And so never look for a generalist when it comes to a PR firm. You're looking for one that's recognized in that this focuses on one industry. It might be, you know, technology that can be broad, but it, you know, often it's very specific. And, you know, it really comes down to, you know, who are they getting news, their clients' news? Who are they, you know, what kind of attention are they getting? What kind of pickup? If it's just, you know, I know people can pay to be on like Fortune and Forbes and stuff like that. So if it's only specific like that, then, you know, I would be wary of it. But, you know, if it does look like it's industry related publications and things like that, I would feel pretty comfortable that you found someone you can work with.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the agency I work within now, we focus on workforce development and education as our primary sectors, a little bit of entrepreneurship as well. So I think what's interesting in that ecosystem is that PR is a newer service that we're offering for them, right? It's primarily we're doing campaigns for community colleges or adult education systems to get people to come register for classes. We've been finding that we need to really emphasize the local angle. And so in that case, I might not have all the relationships if we're adding a little bit of a PR element to their social media and their digital advertising and marketing. But I do need to make sure that I'm reaching the right publications on a local level with the right stories. So right. Getting into that, when people are doing pitches and press releases, what are some things that you look for in a good press release? I know you talked about some things that are bad examples right. of releases, but what are some winning ideas for press releases?
So I think that anytime you can add data to your press release, it can be a really great anchor. So if you have like, you know, here's a service that we have, a new product or a new service, having, you know, immediately opening into it and saying, you know, 67% of small businesses in our industry fail within the first 5 years because of this. And this is the product and service that we have. That is so much more powerful. And it really, you know, from a journalist standpoint, well, I can really anchor a story with that little bit of data. So anytime that you can take existing data that's just out there and put it in there to strengthen your position and your argument can go a long ways. You know, also, one thing that I always have is something in my back pocket for clients who just feel defeated. They've done a few releases. Nothing has been picked up. You know, no real earned media. I always say, you know, how about a survey or study within your industry? And they feel like it's so much work, but it isn't. You know, I have a model that I follow where we do 16 questions, brainstorm those, make sure that they're really timely and specific to speaking to your industry right now. You know, it might be, you know, hey, post-pandemic, have you had trouble establishing a culture in your office? Are more people still not wanting to work, you know, in the office? Also, it could be towards economic things like, you know, do you plan on spending less in marketing over the next 2 quarters or more or the same? And all these little things can sort of take your industry's temperature right now, and people would want to know the answer. And so, you know, think of anything that you might ask a colleague at a conference, you know, and that could be fodder, brainstorm. That's where the importance is, really coming up with creative questions. I like 16 questions. I use SurveyMonkey, 4 questions per page. So cool. If someone gives up halfway, you've got 8 responses and nice. You front loaded the most important ones. And then you take that link and the next pushback that I get from clients is, who do I send it to? Well, you know, you don't have to have a Rolodex of everybody in your industry. There are so many independent and small trade associations out there. Totally. Pick one that has like at least 500, 600 members. You don't want to go to the large ones, but, you know, ask if they'll send it out, that link to their members, and tell them that in exchange for that, you'll mention them in a press release you'll be issuing over the wire. And a lot of the small and independent trade associations get almost no media attention. Really? It's the large trade associations that dominate the industry news. And so they will see this as a win-win. And they're also much more open for approving stuff where the large trade associations rarely will cooperate with you. And I've had it work so many times. We usually get a couple hundred responses. Generally, if you have 100 or more responses, it's fine from a media standpoint. And you get the results of the survey. You analyze it. What were the big aha moments? I mean, did something in here really shock you? And if so, that's going to be the focus of the release. So most press releases are going to focus on 2, maybe 3 of the questions. I say build out a page on your website where you list all the questions and the results, the responses, because sometimes a journalist will say, I like this press release, but let's see what else is there. And they might have a different spin. They might like, I've written a lot about this. And question number five, whoa, I could really build out a great article there. So all that, you put it together, you send that out to the media. Generally, it gets 4 to 8 earned media articles every time we do this. It really works. Yeah. And I have one client that it's their bread and butter, and they've been doing this for 4 or 5 years. They represent lots of little industry verticals. And so they do 20 to 30 of these press releases annually, one survey for each little vertical. And each one they do gets between 8 to 14 articles. Every single one, 5 years, works again and again. And it seems like a lot of work, but it really doesn't have to be, as long as you build out a process and just follow it. And a lot of people at the other side of it are just like, you're right, it was not as difficult as I thought it would be. And, you know, maybe they approached it with, you know, a little bit of the imposter syndrome, where they're just like, I don't feel like I matter. I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, when it comes to these types of things, just doing it makes you an expert over time. In the case of this client of mine, Clutch.co, they are recognized now as the survey guys, and they just did it. You know, they tested lots of different types of releases. They fell into that one. It just works again and again, to the point that now they're really recognized for their surveys.
Wow. You're giving us so much gold. So thank you. And my next question, I have two, but one was about A/B testing and splitting different releases. So can you talk about that?
Sure. So I love A/B split testing. I personally do it in my business processes. I started a business as a poet, so I don't have much of a business background, but I would just do wild things where I would create a new ad, watch it for a few days, and if we didn't get a lot of business, I'd say that it's not working. And I ended up taking some courses in marketing and learned about, you know, being statistically relevant and, you know, having to have enough conversions for each sample in order to make a decision. And that really excited me. And I tested lots of little things that we do. How we onboard new customers was one. We used to send what we called a shock and awe package to new customers, full of, like, you know, crab chips, because we're from Baltimore. They put spice chips, crab spices on it. We had a raven in there. All kinds of fun stuff. It was fun in a box. It was about $60 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, people seemed to like it, but I had a client who came back to me and said, hey, just to let you know, I thought it was unprofessional. And, you know, I'm a business guy now, so rather than get offended, I'm like, let's split test it. So for 6 months, we took all new customers and sent them that, half of them. And then the other half, we sent them a book and a letter welcoming them. And then we looked at their lifetime value over a year, 2 years, 3 years. Now it's been 5 years. Currently, the people who received the book and the letter, their lifetime value at this point is 4 times that of the people who received the $60 box. The book and letter is under $10.
Oh my
God. The shakna is $60. So not only was I spending a lot more, I was creating an impression where people just didn't feel like, I guess, I was professional enough to give us, you know, ongoing business. And so that's one A/B split test for my business process. So I'm a big fan of A/B split testing. When it comes to issuing press releases, it gets a little more difficult because a lot of it's timing. So if you know, currently the Newswire doesn't have a mechanism for you to send out a release with 2 different headlines. But, you know, there are things that you can do. You can, you know, test it on your website with blog posts for similar articles and things like that. You could do an email send to your customers if you have a new product launch and test out 2 different headlines and then determine, is one better for a press release? I would love for the marketing side of split testing to go into the press release world, because that's one of the downsides of PR. I mean, marketing people hate PR because it's so hard to measure results. You know, you can put a tracking URL in a press release, but I guarantee you, if the New York Times does link to you, which I have had happen once, they will not include a tracking component to it. It will just be the specific URL. And the one URL that we got in the New York Times that was linked to a site was a page about the survey. And they had built it out as a resource, and they linked out to it. New York Times says we do not include websites in any of our articles. Yeah. And that's my one exception that I'm really proud of. But it does tell you that if you build out a resource, you know, that is the one place that they were more likely to leak to you. That being said, when you get articles in Wall Street Journal and New York Times, you do get an SEO benefit from it with no links.
Right.
Google has patented this, and it's common knowledge that they give an implied link when they can tell that an authority has written about you.
Well,
and if they can tell by the context of an article about e-releases, for example, and it mentions press releases, they know that that's me and I get that love and my SEO will go up even though there's no link directly to e-releases.
That's amazing.
And yeah. And so because there's no links often in these articles, it makes it very difficult to determine from an ROI standpoint, is PR working or not?
Yeah.
And, you know, but that being said, you know, we have lots of anecdotal instances where it easily worked. I mean, we did an initiative during the pandemic that was called the Dining Bond Initiative that we supported. We did a press release for them. It was set up to nominate a favorite local restaurant. And if this group could get in touch with them, you could give money and it would be sort of like a gift certificate that would be honored by them. And, you know, the downside is the restaurant may never reopen, but hey, you gave some money that hopefully went to keep them going a little bit longer. Generated over $10 million in revenue. The only marketing they did was PR. And, you know, one $350 press release that was gifted, you know, really generated that. And that's a wild, out of the box result. But it resulted in over 150 articles. Lots of places picked it up. It did so well because there was so much uncertainty and, you know, negativity early on in the pandemic. People didn't know what was going on. Here was something that was positive. Everybody's been sent home for 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And here was something actionable. Yeah. Here was something.
So optimistic.
Right. Here's something actionable you could do to help your favorite local restaurant. So people really got behind it. It did really well. And it shows the leverage opportunity that a newswire has. Because if you have something that really is a high caliber newsworthiness, it can go really far and wide and can work extremely well. You know, that being said, I think that more than A/B split testing headlines for press releases is to sort of just get a feel for, you know, when news is out in your industry. Right now, a lot of people front load stuff earlier in the week and it's a lot less competitive, like on a Wednesday, Thursday, or even a Friday.
Yeah.
And when I have people say, I've got this news to get out, but, you know, I don't know about it going out tomorrow, which is a Friday, I always say every publicly traded company issues bad news Friday after the market closes. And what do you see first thing Monday morning? Right there on the headline, that negative news. Mm-hmm. So people are covering you every day of the week. And I think that being open to playing around with what days you issue your press release, I think Wednesdays and Thursdays are really great opportunities for people. It's just so many people clouding Mondays and Tuesdays. I think that that's a really great opportunity for people to take advantage of. You know, I also think that, you know, looking at other types of ways and to stand out is really important for people. You know, so many people, especially small business and entrepreneurs, want to seem like they're big and corporate. And yet some of the people who have done the best with me are those who've shared their story, you know, their journey, you know, the authenticity of who they are. And I tell people, it's like, look at everybody that goes on Shark Tank. Everybody that goes on Shark Tank opens with their story.
Yeah.
You know, I was laid off. I had this hobby. I thought maybe I could do this business. Or, you know, I have these great memories of my father always making this type of, you know, recipe. And it had been passed down from his mother. And all of a sudden, I was home with my kids and I had more time when they went to school. And I felt like now's the opportunity for me to start a business and see if there's something here. People love that. It's a human interest element. It helps to humanize us. People like to do business with people, not with logos and corporations. So don't discount your story. You know, what made you create your company, your product, or your service? That is really powerful. And that's one of the, you know, big things that I see so many small businesses just exclude because they think it's unprofessional.
Oh, it's something I preach all day long is the storytelling aspect. You have to share because it makes everything so much more relatable. What I think is really interesting, I want to make sure everybody who's listening or watching understands we're talking about the press release side here, not the pitching side. Because I know journalists have specific ways they like to be pitched as well, separate from receiving press releases are finding them. But I love the fact that we're having this conversation because what you're saying is press releases are very highly relevant in this day and age. As long as you pick the right platform, you can get results. You can get that earned media that you're looking for. So one other question I had for you was, you talked about ways that people can issue press releases. People can just go to ereleases.com and release one, but you also work with people on an individual basis. So what does that look like? Can they find that resource through ereleases.com as well?
Yes, they just visit the website. We don't employ salespeople, or all of our employees are editors. And so you can reach them through chat, through the phone, email. If you have something you want us to look at, we're there. I also have a free masterclass for people who are considering press releases. And it's at ereleases.com/plan, P-L-A-N. And it's a great place to take an audit. It's a 1-hour video of the types of strategic press releases that do get media pickup. And I think that anybody who goes through that will probably, if they're taking notes, have like 10 ideas for strategic types of press releases they could do, so that if they do a PR campaign of 6 to 8 releases, and most of them are on this list, they're going to be meaningful. They're the ones that are more likely to get pickup, you know, like the survey or study, or, you know, this your own story, you know, authenticity and things like that. So there's lots of those things that are there. And I think that, yes, when you do your campaign, you're going to have misses where nothing gets picked up. But if you're following those as examples, you're going to have some hits along the way. I've never seen it not happen when you're working with strategic releases, just like the survey. I've never had that fail, with maybe one exception, where a client asked one question, and it was a dating website, and they asked the question, do you like tall men?
Okay.
And nobody was interested in the response to that, because that's an obvious question. You know, you didn't ask, you know, my model is 16 questions, and you want to have surprising things that people would want to know the answer to.
Yeah.
And that client didn't follow my advice, and it didn't work out for them. But, you know, if you ask really great questions and you ask a variety of questions, you can get away with 4 being bad questions. You can get away with 8 being bad questions. You can get away with, you know, 14 of them being bad questions. But if you ask 2 that are really great questions and you focus a press release on that, people will want to know what the response was. What percentage of people feel this way? Mm-hmm. And then you can add your analysis and some quotes by you as to why it turned out that way. So if you follow these strategic types of releases, you will get media pickup, and it will work for you. And hopefully you'll avoid the releases that I see every day, which are personnel changes where it's a new associate of HR or something along those lines.
What do you do when you get those releases? Do you try to gently steer them in the right direction, or do you just have to accept them because this is what somebody submitted?
So I just accept them now.
Okay.
If a client comes in and says, what do you think? I will immediately tell them, I don't think this is a great use of your money to spend this to go over a wire. And, you know, here's why. And here's the types of releases you should be focusing on. But, you know, I've gone to clients over the years and said, you know, I noticed that you do a lot of these new hire releases, you know, what's the goal? Because I know that you're not getting lots of articles from it. And most of them say the new hire really likes it, seeing their name on a few websites, and they just feel really good that the company's acknowledging them. And I'm like, okay. So the real goal for them is not to get an article in the Wall Street Journal or, you know, a trade publication or anything like that. So I get it, but I do think that people, you know, should focus a little bit more strategically. And, you know, maybe take that press release and send it directly to your local paper with a headshot and maybe a couple of trade publications directly yourself. You'll probably get the same results.
Wow. Okay, now let's talk about AI. So we know AI is changing the entire ecosystem, whether it's on the journalist side, whether it's there are so many places that are now offering to write AI pitches and press releases for you. I hear journalists saying we can tell when something's been written with AI. People don't go through and actually personalize it. How do you see AI playing into the world of press releases as a positive or a negative?
Okay, so I have played around with AI, and AI is horrible at coming up with ideas for press releases. It comes up with the ones that you expect, like, a new hire or a milestone, like, you know, your 10th anniversary. And there's a lot of things like that that are, you know, I have blog posts on my website about things that could be press releases. But the strategic types of releases, the ones that really are effective, they never come from AI. And so, you know, I think that for strategy, AI is not there yet. But for actually writing a press release, I'm okay with it. So you have to have the idea. You can't have them come up with the idea. Yeah. But if you approach them and say, hey, I just did a survey. This was the big aha moment. Could you write a press release with this? I feel it could be useful. And I also feel if you could break it down paragraph by paragraph, you can get some well-written paragraphs. Who this is for? This is for the person who can't afford a writer or a service to write for them, and they don't feel comfortable writing themselves. I think AI is appropriate. You know, when it comes to AI, I would never use it for writing blog posts and putting on my website because, you know, Google is the main driver of traffic. Yep. And Google is a lot smarter than AI, than me and AI and a lot of people out there. You know, Google's going to know that this stuff is generated by AI. And I think if you're putting content on your website, I wouldn't want it to be AI long term. Now, when it comes to a press release, it's written for journalists. So if a journalist can read it and generate an article from it, there's no downside because the end use, the earned media, has been written by a journalist, not by us.
Right.
And, you know, I think that if a journalist gets an article or a press release that's well written and it's a good hook, you know, the idea has resonance, they're going to write an article about it, and regardless of who generated it. So I think it's completely appropriate to have it write a press release. I just, you know, you need to know going into it what the release is about and have an expectation of what you want, you know, each paragraph to be. Also, I find that quotes that AI generates are kind of safe, and they're not great quotes. And by great quotes, it's like, tell me what a great quote is, Mickey. It's so hard. It's like art. Well, it's a great piece of art. But some of the things that I notice with a great quote is, wow, it was said so powerfully, or you said something with such precision and made it so succinct that it had some authority. It could also just be controversial, you know, what you say is outlandish or something. But you want to make sure that your quote stands out, because the one thing I know is if a journalist is looking at two press releases and they're both kind of mediocre, but they need to write a story, but one has an amazing quote, they'll often go with that because they can build a good article around an amazing quote. And having a safe quote that just looks like it was corporate speak or written by committee, it doesn't stand out. And I think that a lot of the AI generated quotes are like that. They're softball things. So spend a little more time. If you're going to ever have some creative writing or, you know, apply some, you know, powerful language, a quote's a great place to do it. It doesn't have to be elevated diction or anything like that, but just says something that if they were to take that quote out and just paraphrase it, there'd be a loss. You know, it's like, oh, you said it more powerfully, or you said it with such more conviction or something like that. That's your real place to shine.
I never even thought about using AI to come up with quotes for me. So that's such a foreign concept, but I can see how that would be something that people use a lot. So thank you for sharing that. I have really loved this conversation. And even though I kind of go between like branding and marketing and digital and PR, like a little bit of each of those things. So it's really great to hear from an expert who's seen hundreds, if not thousands, of press releases go past your desk in your system every day. And really be able to give us some information. And of course, we'll be linking to your master class in the show notes and to e-releases. Is there anything else that you want to share that you don't think we've covered that people really need to understand about press releases?
I think one of the big things is that a lot of people really feel like, you know, press releases are for big corporations and not for small companies and small businesses. But one of the things that you have to realize is journalists like to be seen as curators, and, you know, they're never going to get a pat on the back for saying, hey, I liked how you covered, you know, Microsoft's in their latest rollout of Office. But, you know, if they, you know, write about a Kickstarter campaign that a lot of people didn't know about, or a small business or a tool or product that someone's never seen, they know that they get a lot more appreciation of that. And for that reason, they're much more likely to cover a small business or, you know, a new brand rather than they would a really large, well-funded corporation.
Wow. Amazing. Mickey, thank you so much for being here today. And I always ask, do you have a favorite quote or mantra or some words that you live by?
I think the one that I really like is, if you really look closely, most overnight successes took a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's by Steve Jobs. And it's because you look at people and, you know, like a startup, and it just effortlessly grows. And you're just like, whoa, how did they do that? And then when you find out, behind most startups are people who've had some failures in their past. They've had some successes. They know what's working. And there's a legacy there that goes into it, and their, you know, education and all that talent that looks effortless, but it's really not. It took decades to get there.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I've really appreciated your time and expertise and how much you've shared with us. I know I'm going to go and take your free course myself, and I know what platform I'm going to be recommending to clients. And Mickey, this is not a paid advertisement. Mickey's just here as a guest. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But thank you again, Mickey, and thank you to the audience for coming back and listening or watching this episode of Your Brand Amplified. I'll be back again in a few days with another amazing expert to share their knowledge and help you grow your business. Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.